warning, this truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
And now, spaghetti. Welcome to Bob Enyart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and Brian Enyart is in studio. What a trip to Italy. Our Bible tour of Italy. When in Rome, do Romans. We had a fabulous time.
It was just amazing. We ate way too much spaghetti.
So why don't we talk through the trip? You know, people in the audience were praying for a good trip. So many wanted to go who couldn't go.
What a pity.
And we learned so much, including about our biblical Christian worldview. Brian, wherever I go, whenever I travel, whatever we see, whether it's from geology or we're in a city zoo or we're visiting ancient ruins, the question is, how does this fit into a biblical worldview?
Right, and not trying to force it in like evolutionists do.
That's true. Does this contradict our biblical worldview? Before we even got to Italy, in fact, some of us, we met in New York City and spent some time seeing the sights. You and Dominic, my son, and others went jogging in Central Park.
Oh, it was just beautiful.
Beau Valentine.
At sea level, you can breathe there.
Yes.
So you can jog
right,
if you want to.
So Cheryl and I got there before anyone else, and we went to our favorite place in Manhattan, which is the main public library.
And it's absolutely gorgeous.
Isn't
we walked
it?
By it one morning, coincidentally.
Yeah, 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. And so the main reading room on the third floor, it's iconic. It's like the grand rooms and the palaces you're in Europe, in Italy, except that they let you stay there and work in there.
Wow. I was thinking the same thing. It fits in so well with like the Roman architecture in
yes.
terms of the grandeur and the
yeah.
design.
Yeah, it really does. So
it's beautiful.
So I'm waiting for them. I got a library card there. I'm waiting for them to bring up some books from their stacks. Next to the library is Bryant Park. Gorgeous. Cheryl and I had breakfast there. And below Bryant Park, there are multiple floors of books, millions of books. So I asked for a couple books on quantum mechanics. It takes them, you know, a half hour or so to get down there, get the books up. So I figure I walk through the stacks that are in the reading room, and any book I pick out will somehow most likely affirm the Bible. So here's this massive two-volume set, Oxford's World History of Food. So I pull that at one of those out.
And you're thinking you're depressed because you're like, well, I'm going to be wrong this time.
Yeah, no. So right. So they're both 1,000 pages, both volumes. I open it up. Here's the history of wheat. Look, the first evidence of wheat domestication, you know, who knows? Maybe it's from Australia. Maybe it's from sub-Saharan Africa, from Mesopotamia, the Middle East. Write what you would expect based on Genesis and Exodus.
Wow, of
course. Exactly.
Yeah.
What the Bible tells us is the history of the world. So the whole trip was like that 100 times over. Everything affirming the truth that we learn in the scriptures. In New York City, does anything stand out in your mind before we even take off on Alitalia to land in Rome?
Yeah, we went to St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Oh, wow.
And when we went in there, we got to sit in and hear part of a mass.
Yes. In the main cathedral space, there's the altar. You know, they're shaped like a cross. And behind the main altar is another chapel, part of the main space, and a mass is going on, a priest, a bishop doing the mass. Do you recall the organ, the incredible organ being played? That was awesome. But then the priest says, this is a moment of crisis for the Catholic Church. Please pray for the Catholic Church. And we began talking. We went outside and we said, they have it so backward. The crisis is the last 50 years with homosexual priests all over the world raping boys. That's the crisis. This is the moment of justice. And with light being shined on the problem, the crisis is what had been happening.
Yeah, you know, but for a business, it is a crisis. And so since that's primarily what the Catholic Church is, of course, that's the way they'd have to see it.
Yeah, you know, the more you have to lose in this life, the harder it is to care about what you'll lose in the next.
Interesting, of course.
So they have all this real estate. And when you get to the Vatican, you see it in extreme and all the perversion there.
Yeah, you see the poverty that they have. They have nothing at
all. Yeah, because they've
the
taken vows of poverty. And vows of celibacy, right.
That they tacked to the wall.
Yes.
That Michelangelo doodled when he was five.
Right. All their wealth. Incredible wealth.
Yeah, of course.
But so they have so much, not only the wealth and property and buildings and artwork and on, but then also their income-producing ability and their influence and power. And so they have so much in this life that it's harder for them to care about what they may lose in the next.
Well, the Bible says it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven.
Yes, that's right.
Because we value so much what we've built here and we've...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's understandable.
And so Denver Bible Church has a tour to Italy at the historic moment when the Pope is meeting with these archbishops from around the world about their crisis of the priest sexual molestation crisis. And you know, on this show for years now, we've said that Pope Francis achieved this status not in spite of his support for homosexuality, but because of his support. And is it a coincidence that all the priests that have been trying to sweep under the rug the molestation scandal are the priests, the bishops, archbishops that he has been promoting? That's not a coincidence. So,
and this is all because they don't allow men to get married. Like, that's the foundational.
That's a major.
It's confusing to me. I don't understand how this could be such a central, ingrained, foundational like concept within the Catholic Church that just in one state alone, there's 1,000 cases over the last. Wasn't it in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Pennsylvania, and then Germany released their study, and all over the world.
So how many countless cases have there been? And this hasn't been going on since the very beginning of the Catholic Church, but just maybe in the last couple centuries?
Well, in the last half a century, we know it's been epidemic, but who knows before that? Because there's such pressure on everyone to shut up, to say nothing. And systematically, the church would take a priest who has raped boys, and rather than report him to the police, they'd move him to an unsuspecting parish, take a predator and sick him on innocent children and families.
And it's because
that's what they've done systematically.
Because it's a business and they don't want to they don't want to admit to any wrongdoing because it would hurt their revenue. That's essentially why they're doing this
Than there's been an incredible lack of contrition, lack of sorrow.
Well, it's strange
lack
because
of humility.
In my business, if an employee steals from a client, I want that person arrested. Like, I'm excited to help get them arrested.
Right, exactly.
So I'm trying to understand the motivation behind, oh, he's a predator, let's move him to prey on others. It's almost as though it's intentional.
Yeah, because we know that the priests become bishops and the bishops archbishops, and the archbishops, one of them, you know, cardinals, somebody becomes a pope, and it's ingrained throughout the system. And like in Washington, D.C., we know that the archbishop for some years was having sex with the seminarians, the young men who are going to be priests. So he's conditioning them. So it was, and then Pope Francis, even though that guy had been punished previously, Pope Francis is promoting him, McCarrick, is elevating him. So it's so sick, it's so perverse. And at that time in history, Denver Bible Church ends up going to Rome. And as our guide, Daniele, what an amazing, did you enjoy our guide we had throughout the country?
Yes, especially that he would help us learn Italian, which was real fun.
Yes.
And he was very well educated and wanted to help.
Very much so.
Greatest.
And just pleasant to talk to. And so he said, at the end of the trip, he said, well, this is out of hundreds of groups I've led through Italy, this is the only one where people were arrested. And so Ken and Joe Scott standing just outside of the Vatican with their signs, we'll put photos on today's show summary, saying, Pope, repent, resign. And they were there for about an hour and a half. And the thousands of people going into the Vatican, not a one of them expressed disapproval. Mostly it was like dismay that someone could do that right in front of the Vatican. But all the other locals and tourists, they were like, thumbs up, and they only expressed approval, no disapproval at all.
I'm interested in some more details. Were they told you must leave, and then they were arrested? How did that
work
out?
Well, after an hour and a half, some folks from the Vatican working at some level, we don't know what level they were, came out and tried to discourage them, and that didn't work, so the police were called. And the police, it was funny, I wasn't there. Now, inside the Vatican, as you'll recall, we have established now with 100% certainty the Catholic Church does not know where Peter's wife is buried. They don't know, and they don't care, right? They say Peter was the first pope. They say popes can't be married. Well, Peter was married.
And don't ask, because they
don't even want to talk about misogynists. To them, Peter's wife doesn't exist. She better not exist. Shut up. And Jesus healed his mother-in-law, Peter's mother-in-law, and Paul said that Peter would travel in ministry with his wife. So that's long after the resurrection. So Peter was married.
Clearly.
They couldn't care less. So officially, they don't know where she's buried, and they don't want to know. And shut up. Shut up, you face.
Put some spaghetti in your face.
Did you hear in the Sistine Chapel that deep voice, silencio?
I actually didn't. I was trying
silence.
To listen, but everyone was so loud that
silencio.
I couldn't hear
it. So it turns out every Catholic basilica, wherever you go in Italy, the same exact guy is there. Silencio. It's an MP3 file, you know?
They told silence. Us we had to be quiet going into the Sistine Chapel. And so I was expecting it to be the most silent room in the world.
It was so loud.
And as we walked in, our tour guide's like, okay, now look above you. And I thought we were supposed to be quiet.
Yeah. It was very loud. Cheryl and I stayed in there a long time.
I did too.
Looking at all the artwork. So, but we're a little out of order. So outside, Ken and Joe Scott, they call the police after an hour and a half. And the police take their signs away from them. In Italy, it's against the law to, like, disparage the Pope.
Wow. I had no idea.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
So the police are holding their signs.
What if the Pope comes out of the Vatican and walks into a shop and says, I'm a taking this a hat.
Right.
Can you be like, no, you're a thief. No, you can't disparage the Pope.
Right. Plus, you already have a beanie. So they're holding the signs that are in Italian and English, double-sided. We've learned years ago, you make a protest sign, you make it double-sided, because you never know what might happen. Well, the police are holding their signs, and passersby are so interested. It's like, oh, look, the police want the Pope to resign.
I can't believe
that. Why do the
that.
Police want the Pope
That's
to repent?
That's brilliant.
Yeah, they're holding the signs
they take
for
the signs.
A
now,
long time.
Now the police or the protesters.
Right outside. That happens.
We need a picture of that.
In our protest, that's happened so many times where the police become part of the protest. It's really great. So after that, Ken and Joe get brought to the local police station, and they're there for a couple hours. They're finally released. But the whole time they were there, they had their signs in the windows overlooking a square, a public square, totally readable by everyone passing by the police station. So now the police station is calling for the Pope to
Ken
resign.
Ken and Joe Scott are heroes.
Yeah, they're just astounding.
They fear no man.
And so at the end, the police said, well, you know, your court date, we can't assign you your court date now. It will be in some years. In Joe Scott's
Wait, life. That means they get to go back?
Yeah, well, apparently.
So that's the next trip.
So Joe, yeah, good. So Joe's like, some years, and the officer says, our system is not so good. So
it doesn't sound much different from ours. And I guess ours isn't great either. So.
No, not at all. So we land in Italy and in Rome, and we get on our bus. The 21 of us, plus two folks, remember, who joined us for the Amalfi Coast.
Of course.
Right.
And I might not be of great use to you here, because my main thoughts about the trip are about the coffee and the food and the tiramisu. So I remember
and
when
the
we
spaghetti. And the How spaghetti. About the meatballs?
Well, they were amazing.
Yeah. Everything.
We ate meatballs right next to the Colosseum. Right next to the Circus Maximus.
Yes. The prosciutto and melon.
Now the. Oh, the
so prosciutto. Phenomenal. People wonder who ever thought of taking prosciutto and melon, cantaloupe, and putting them together.
Well, it's been 7,000 years. Hopefully they would have figured it out by now.
A lot
now.
Of combinations.
And they did.
That's one of the better combinations.
It's so good. And the Circus Maximus, that's where the first Christians were martyred, wasn't it?
Well,
we learned.
Yes. And in the Colosseum also. And so how horrific, you know, to see the Colosseum, so much of it still stands.
Yes.
To this day, 2,000 years later. And to realize that we beat them. We beat them because the Roman Empire, they were killing Christians by the thousands, and we beat them.
They're gone, and we're still here.
2,000 years later, the gospel is being proclaimed around the world. And where is Caesar? You know, where are the emperors? They're in the dust of the ground. They're in the history books.
Yeah,
Pontius, even their language is dead.
Pontius Pilate finds a man innocent, puts him to death, sentences him to death, and then they begin to systematically try to eradicate these annoying Christians.
Yes.
Those people back then, they had no fear. Like, I wish I could get into that same type of a mindset that I feel like you have, where you don't fear death because who cares? I'm just going to heaven.
Well, yeah, Jesus said, don't fear those who can kill the body. Fear God. Fear God.
Exactly.
And what a great point. And that mindset does give you a degree of boldness. You don't want to be foolish, but you could have boldness and courage.
Well, and they would run at the lions. And Polycarp, when they found him and they were going to martyr him, they said, well, we're going to send you to the beasts. And he said, I'm not afraid of the beasts. And they said, well, we're going to burn you at the stake. And he said, why should I fear your fire when you should be fearing eternal fire?
Wow. That's powerful.
That is powerful.
Because Jesus talked more about hell than anyone in the Old Testament. In fact, the whole Old Testament, most of the Bible's teaching about hell comes from Jesus Christ. So we go from Rome, and our first stop, or first hotel, in fact, is in, I say Puteoli because of the Bible, English for many years, but it's what? How would you pronounce it today?
Puzzoli.
Puzzuoli. Puzzoli.
Something like that.
Yeah. And so, right, the Bay of Naples. Napoli Don. If you're from Naples, you're Napoli Don. So here we are, and here's a plaque on the wall. This is where Paul landed, first time in Italy, heading to Rome.
Which, of course, was not Italy at the time.
Right. It's the Roman Empire.
Right.
And we read on this plaque that's been up there forever, Paul the Apostle to the Gentiles. And there starts our study of when in Rome do Romans. And we talked about the central truths of the Bible that help you understand the plot, the storyline, the arc of what's going on in the New Testament and in the entire Old and New Testaments, which many churches don't really teach. And we had people on the tour who were so thrilled to hear these very important aspects of what's going on in the story of the Bible so that then you could understand the doctrines, the theology better, because God revealed himself through human history. And so the history is a major part of what God is trying to communicate, but it often gets lost. So that's where we started. And then remember how gorgeous it was there in our hotel, in our first meal in Italy?
The first meal was just amazing. And like I said, that's all I think about is all the pasta.
Yeah.
And they do primi, secondi, and then they do dessert. So you get your pasta, your meat.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it truly was.
And
fabulous.
Now I'm glad. I'm excited. I know we get to go back because we got to go for Ken and Joe's court date.
Oh, yeah. What a great point.
That was the only reason they came, really, was they were like, wait, we can go protest
now,
the Pope?
Now, this trip, not only did you plan the whole thing, but this was your idea back on our 25th anniversary.
Yes.
You said, we're going to go to Italy.
Well, so many people had said, when's the next trip? The last trip was years ago to Greece.
This has been our sixth trip in 27 years being on the air. So, wow, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see and learn so much. So there we – oh, and how gorgeous that harbor.
Oh, it was – and at night, at sunset, the sun was setting just behind the harbor. The sky turned to red and pink.
And the islands.
They lit up with lights.
And then one of our fellow pilgrims, somebody in our group, brings along – he's a – an airline pilot for a major airline, brings along a drone. The most phenomenal pictures, not only there in Naples, but then as we continued on through the Amalfi Coast.
Well, and just wait a minute. With that drone, the cinematic quality, he was just exploring Puzzoli, just from the air. He would fly it a mile away from us.
Yes,
he can't even see it
literally
anymore.
Literally, a mile away.
He found a Colosseum, a smaller Colosseum in Puzzoli, and he was just hovering over it, looking down, and we're looking at... And you're not. That's not like a relic that you can visit there, I don't think.
So, and this is in HD.
Yes.
4K video. And he did, I don't want to use his, I don't want to get him in trouble with the airline he works for.
Let's call him Vincenzo.
Vincenzo. So, Vincenzo did this not only there in on the Amalfi Coast, but then in Rome, at incredible sights where I'm sure you're not allowed to fly a drone. Then in Florence, in Venice, Brian, the video footage is stunning. It is like BBC documentary quality.
Exactly. And One of the neatest things is that he was able to dig deeper than the tour guide was taking us. So when we were traveling toward the Amalfi Coast, he sent his – we stopped. The bus stopped. We got to have like a little rest.
Your stop on steep cliffs.
Steep cliffs.
Overlooking
water
the
you.
Sea, just the Mediterranean just to the south. Here's one of the fingers of the sea that come up toward Europe. And so we're stopped there. It's so precarious. It's a steep cliff that all these little villas are built on.
On a small road where if you try to cross, they will just run you over. And you stop at the shop and you get a limoncello and you get a cafe, an espresso. But then while we're doing that, Vincenzo has his drone and he flies it down the cliff. And he finds grottos that the Romans had built into the cliff to hide ships.
Yes. And then about a mile and a half across this little – another little inlet like a harbor. And it's all stunning. It was gorgeous. And the fellowship, how fun it was to all be together. So then from the Amalfi Coast, then we head to Rome. And we began to see not only where the Christians were part of the entertainment being slaughtered – by being torn apart by live beasts and killed. But also then we went to the Vatican. And the perversion at the Vatican, I began asking people on this tour, all together with our friends who joined us, 23 of us, asking people there, going to Italy, going to Rome, being in the Vatican, did it make you, now everyone, you're all Protestants, none of you are Catholic, did it ease your criticism or your bad impression of the Catholic Church, or did it increase your bad impression?
For me, it increased it.
Everyone said in the extreme. In fact, the common response was what we saw was nauseating.
Yes.
It was disgusting. It was vulgar and at many different levels.
Well, and you start to understand the homosexuality and the preying on young men in the church when the Vatican's filled with naked men everywhere you look.
Naked men.
Sculptures,
naked
paintings.
Men at children's eye levels. Right, right. Sculptures and paintings on the walls, on the ceilings, everywhere you go. And then also the adoration of men where you have, we could have taken 1,000 photographs.
The worshiping of men.
Yeah, it's like worship, right, where you have a bishop, an archbishop, a cardinal, and you have children or angels at their feet, like looking up at them in adoration.
Yeah.
And it's this constant, constant elevating of men as though they were demigods.
Well, we're in St. Peter's, St. Paul's, the basilicas, you know, in New York and Italy. And all I can think is these men, who, Paul, Peter, if they knew this is here, if they know it's here, they're not happy about it.
Oh, they'd be disgusted.
They're being worshipped.
Peter, Mary would be the most disgusted.
Of course.
You've got thousands of celibate men, a large percentage of whom are homosexual, who have this perverse relationship with adoring Mary and molesting boys.
And something just as a slight tangent I don't understand is, isn't it one of the Ten Commandments not to make a graven image?
Right, of course.
And how did they miss that?
They took it out.
They took it out.
They took it out of the Ten Commandments, literally.
So they didn't miss it.
When you look at the Ten Commandments as given in Exodus chapter 20, and we count, usually in our Bibles, every verse number that starts the next commandment is in bold. So some commandments, like remember the Sabbath, it's a whole paragraph, so it's a few verses. And then the next one will be in bold, like honor your mother and father and so on. So what they did was they split up do not covet into two commandments, and they removed the one that said don't make any graven images. The Roman Catholic Church did that intentionally. So their churches are filled with graven images, and they are filled with dead bodies. They've turned their churches into cemeteries. How can you have joy in life in the midst of a cemetery? It's such a dissonance. And so the perversions that you see at the Vatican are naked men everywhere. I mean, Michelangelo, he has a lot to answer for. I mean,
he's a perv.
He's a pervert.
Yeah.
And people think because it was done in the Renaissance, you can't criticize it. He's a pervert, and he's mocking the Catholic Church.
That's pretty funny. He chose to do it, I don't know if that's the best way to go about it.
But it is funny.
He clearly wasn't a religious man.
Well, the Sistine Chapel has one guy, aside from all the naked men, one guy who's just mooning everyone there.
I didn't catch that one, but I...
Oh, you didn't see that?
No.
One guy is bent over, and all you could see is a guy bent over with his buttocks shining down
so
on everyone.
He's mocking
there.
The Catholic Church.
He's mocking
Church
them.
With his, he's like, sure, I'll do this. Pay. I wonder
and
how much
Pope
money
the Pope who hired him, he worked there for a couple years. The Pope who hired him, Pius II.
Back in the 1500s.
Yeah, and the Pope says, with Michelangelo wanting to do all this nudity and all, and the Pope says, well, whatever he does, it's up to him. Like, he's passing the buck.
Yeah,
you know?
He was the celebrity of the time. He didn't even sculpt. They had to convince him to paint. He said, I'm not right. a painter. I don't want to do it. But right, they're like, right. no, because you're so great. Yeah. And then he just mocks them throughout
the work
he does.
And so the Pope, really, he's expressing the will of the Pope, with the Pope able to distance himself from all the nudity and all. So it's a scam from the beginning. But the whole Me Too movement, the whole priest molesting children, when you have the basically the capital of the Roman Catholic Church, Rome, the Vatican, with naked men everywhere, and you have priests who are celibate who end up molesting children and having sex with one another, and Michelangelo putting naked men and then statues naked men everywhere, it's just this festering perversion.
And what's strange is a lot of people will think, well, you don't understand. That's their culture. That's how they were at the time period.
Oh, they were perverts.
Yeah. It's better to think it from an absolute perspective that you just know things are wrong. It doesn't matter when they were wrong. It doesn't matter where they are. They're
right.
always wrong.
Yeah. God put clothes on Adam and Eve, and Satan and men have been trying to remove those clothes in public ever since. And by the way, we sort of skipped over, speaking of perversion, Pompeii, the city that was destroyed by Mount Vesuvius 2,000 years ago, and much of it has been excavated, so we got to see what a Roman city was like at the time when Paul was there, and it really was extraordinary. Now, our tour guide asked me, do we want to skip the erotic art? And I said, yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, real glad I did. Because other parts of the trip, it just happened upon you unsuspecting. And a lot of it was pretty gross.
Yeah. And as far as I know, Pompeii is a place with some pretty grotesque stuff. So thanks for skipping that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just so amazing to immerse yourself in this city that was around at the time of Christ. It was built around 300 BC. And then it was destroyed in 76 AD, roughly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to see a snapshot of the way people lived when Christ was on the earth and that they had so many of the similar types of conveniences that we had, for me, that was what was stunning.
Like, yes.
They had fast food shops.
Yeah,
you
they
could be
did.
Walking down the street and, oh, here's a fast food shop. I'll grab some soup
right.
or grain or whatever
right.
and eat it on my way to work.
And were you impressed by how much the archaeologists have been able to learn about what their culture was like back then? Just by looking very carefully at all the ruins?
Of course I was. Yeah.
Yeah, even the examples you just gave in the homes and the differentiating the homes versus the shops.
And the storages.
Yeah.
The people would have their door open. If it was a house, you'd know because there's no groove for the door.
For the door to slide shut.
They wanted it open so people could look in and be impressed by their beautiful inside of their home.
Yeah, and the imperial cult where people would worship Caesar and all the pagan worship everywhere we went. So so much more to share. But Brian Enyart, thank you so much for arranging this whole trip. It's been a trip of a lifetime.
I look forward to arranging the next one, so get ready.
Ooh, like 30th anniversary at BEL?
That sounds good to me.
Where do we go?
I don't know. Let's think about that.
Okay, God bless you guys.